Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In today's episode, I want to provide you with some really interesting information on Cuba. Now, if you've been following the channel, you'll know that I've posted a number of videos on the Cuban economic situation, which has been getting worse over the course of the last 12 months. So at the start of the video, I will give you a brief update on what's happening in the economy of Cuba, because they've now started experiencing more blackouts. They're running out of cash. They simply don't have enough money to be able to literally keep the lights on. But the main focus of this video really is to talk about a very interesting court case that has just been heard in the London courts, whereby a vulture fund has taken the Cuban authorities to court over an unpaid debt back from the 1980s. In fact, this debt was so old that it was actually denominated in German Deutschmarks, a currency that hasn't existed in Europe for more than 20 years. So in today's video, I'll have a look at the details of this court case. We'll go on to talk about what happens to government debt when they default upon it. When does it actually expire? We'll then go on to have a look at the vulture fund that's brought this action against the Cuban authorities, what Cuba's defence is in this case, and what the likely outcome of this case and the implications will be for Cuba and also every other country in the world that's defaulted on its debt. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you for a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch everything, you can pick and choose the best bits. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube, Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon. And I'd like to say thank you so much to everyone that has supported the channel. I really appreciate it. Cuba is the largest of all of the Caribbean islands and has a population of around 11 million people. Cuba is located around 100 miles from the south tip of Florida and is so close that the old joke goes, what's the capital of Cuba? Miami. If you're looking for a detailed history of what's happened to the economy of Cuba, please check out the videos that I posted last summer. However, just as a quick recap, up until the late 1950s, the USA and Cuba actually had a very strong trading relationship. However, in 1959, Fidel Castro took over as the ruler of the country and introduced common ownership policies and took over ownership of a lot of assets that were owned by the American government and also closely aligned itself with Russia and the Soviet Union. As a result of this, the USA placed an embargo on Cuba and heavy sanctions have been in place against Cuba since 1962. Now, throughout the 60s, 70s and early 80s, the relationship between Russia and Cuba was very strong, and Russia actually provided a lot of financial support and sent large quantities of oil to Cuba, and Cuba built up its power station network using that oil. In the late 80s, as the Soviet Union started to fall apart, the support to Cuba fell, and this put major economic pressure on the Cuban authorities, which led to a debt default in 1986. Now, following the breakup of the Soviet Union in 1990, Cuba was thrown into economic crisis and was thrown a lifeline subsequently by Venezuela, which was also operating a communist policy. But unfortunately, Venezuela went into its own economic crisis in 2016, and this led to a major fall in the amount of oil that Venezuela was providing to Cuba. And as a result, Cuba has been in an economic crisis ever since. Now, as I reported in previous videos, in the summer of 2022, Cuba was experiencing major power shortages. It didn't have enough cash to buy in enough oil to keep all of the lights on, and so it was forced to introduce planned blackouts. And unfortunately, those planned blackouts have now returned. The Cuban Minister of Energy and Mines has announced that rolling blackouts will resume in Cuba and will last until May 2023, while the country overhauls its decade-old oil-fired power stations ahead of the energy-intensive summer season. The blackouts are forecast to last around 3 hours each, and repair and maintenance work on the plants will continue throughout the year to continue incorporating power and increasing the reserve to reach June, July and August in better conditions than the previous year. The energy minister went on to say that unexpected problems with power generation could flare up again in the coming months, causing more severe blackouts, but nothing like the 10-hour average of October 2022. Cuban officials have blamed fuel shortages, deferred maintenance and difficulties processing heavy sour Cuban crude also burned at its plants for hobbling power generation. Now, alongside the problems that Cuba's experiencing with regards to power generation, it's also got shortages of food. And over the course of the last 6 months or so, the ties with Russia have started to strengthen again. Russia recently announced an emergency donation of 25,000 tons of wheat to combat shortages on the island, a further sign of deepening ties between the two long-term allies. As part of a dockside ceremony in the Cuban capital of Havana, the Russian ambassador stated that this donation accompanies Cuba's efforts in its development in areas such as industry, machinery, transportation, and energy. In response, Cuba's deputy minister of foreign trade said that the Russians had provided Cuba with food and medicine recently as part of an enduring relationship between the two countries. The Russian government and the people have been on our side in difficult times since the pandemic, she said in a brief interview. Russian President Vladimir Putin and his Cuban counterpart Miguel Díaz-Canel unveiled a monument in Moscow in November to revolutionary Cuban leader Fidel Castro, pledging to deepen their friendship in the face of US sanctions against both countries. Cuban state media said in December that the grain deliveries were part of an $11 million package earmarked by Russia to purchase and deliver wheat to Cuba. And this delivery follows on from the 20,000 tons of wheat shipped from Russia to Cuba in April. Now, as I mentioned at the start of the video, the USA placed sanctions against Cuba in 1962. However, these sanctions were not applied by the rest of the world, so Cuba still had trading relations. And in the 1960s, 70s and early 80s, Cuba was able to raise debt in the international markets. However, as I mentioned earlier in the video, by the mid-1980s, Cuba was struggling financially. A lot of the economic support that was being provided by Russia in the previous two decades had dried up, and it simply didn't have enough cash to be able to make the interest or principal repayments on any of its debt. And in 1986, it formally defaulted on all of its international debt obligations. And I've been asked the question a number of times as to what happens when a country defaults on its debt. How does it compare to when a company defaults on its debt? Well, if we talk about company situations first, when a company gets into financial difficulty and can no longer pay all of its debt obligations, it can go through some form of process. So that process might be Chapter 11 bankruptcy in the USA, or liquidation, or some form of resolution whereby you can agree a settlement with all of your creditors. So you agree to pay them back a percentage of the debt that you're owed. The company can sign a formal agreement, make the payments under that agreement, and then move forward. But the situation with regards to countries is slightly more complicated because there isn't a Chapter 11 bankruptcy process for countries. There isn't any sort of resolution that you can go through. And as a result of that, any debt obligations that a country issues are actually everlasting. They always own that debt, unless you can get everybody around the table and agree some form of settlement. Now, the debt that Cuba had issued in the 60s, 70s and 80s was split into two distinct categories. There was intergovernmental debt, so money that Cuba had borrowed from other countries officially, and then there was commercial debt that Cuba had taken from banks and financial institutions. At the time of its default, the governmental debt that Cuba had taken on was split into three categories. It had around $9 billion worth of debt out to Russia as a result of the strong relationship that they'd had. It had around $750 million worth of debt directly from Japan. And then it had around $11 billion worth of debt from a collection of countries that were calling themselves the Paris Club. In terms of agreeing a final settlement on all of its outstanding debt, Cuba agreed with Russia that it would pay back 10% of the $9 billion that it owed, and in exchange for that, Russia agreed to write off 90%. Cuba then struck a deal with Japan to pay back 20% of the $750 million that it owed, and in exchange for that, Japan agreed to write off 80%. The remainder of the intergovernmental debt was held by a number of different countries that were collectively known as the Paris Club. And the Paris Club is a group of 22 countries that first came together in 1956 when Argentina was on the brink of defaulting on its debt. And a meeting was held in Paris where all of the countries that had outstanding debt to Argentina came together and formed an agreement with regards to the debt settlement process. And since that time, this group of countries have met on a regular basis as and when countries are on the brink of default. Now, the negotiations with the Paris Club actually took an enormous amount of time, and an agreement wasn't actually finally settled until 2015, when the Paris Club agreed to write off $8.6 billion of the $11.1 billion outstanding. Now, the net result of that deal is that Cuba has now reached agreement on 85% of all of the debt that it defaulted on in 1986. However, the other 15% is held by a group of commercial lenders known as the London Club. The name the London Club was coined in 1976 when a group of commercial lenders, or banks essentially, came together because Zaire was about to default on all of the debt obligations that it had issued to all of those commercial lenders. And they came around the table and tried to agree some form of negotiated settlement. Now, unlike the Paris Club, the London Club doesn't actually have any permanent members. It's effectively a term that's used for the group of lenders who have outstanding debt to any country that's on the brink of defaulting. And the difference between the London Club and the Paris Club is that the members of the London Club are commercial entities who are lending money for the sake of making profit. When we're talking about intergovernmental debt that's provided to countries like Cuba, it's not just about making money. That money is being given to help develop the country, to bring it on, to try to get it to become a first world entity. Whereas the main driver for commercial loans is to make profit from that lending and to get back as much as you can from those loans. And that fundamental difference is one of the reasons why Cuba is now being taken to court, because one of the original holders of that debt has actually sold the debt to what's called a vulture fund. And that vulture fund is now doing everything that it can to force Cuba to pay back all of those loan obligations. So you may be asking, what's a vulture fund? Well, it has nothing to do with vultures or birds. This is basically a hedge fund that's been designed to pick up debt at a low price in the secondary market and then do everything it can to get paid as much as possible. So it's been reported that the vulture fund in question here, which is called CRF1, previously called Cuban Recovery Fund, picked up some of the Cuban debt around 10 years ago for around 10 cents on the dollar. So that means that for every $1 of debt that that fund bought, it paid 10 cents. Now, if it can force the Cuban authorities to pay back 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 cents on that loan, then obviously that would represent a very good return from the vulture fund's perspective. And that's essentially what's happening here. And this is why the commercial debt is very different from the governmental debt. Governments do not sue other governments for repayment of loans. They agree some form of settlement, or they basically just decide that they're never going to get the money back. So there's basically no secondary market for the government debt. Those governments aren't looking to offload it for 10 or 20 cents on the dollar to some form of vulture fund. They will just write it off. Whereas a commercial lender will always look to maximize the value on any of its assets. So if there is a secondary market forming for things like Cuban debt and vulture funds want to buy that debt, then that commercial lender has an obligation to its shareholders to look into that contract and do that deal if it makes sense. And this is exactly what's happened in this scenario. The Cuban debt was originally owned by a French bank and an Italian bank. However, they've sold out of their position. They got paid 10 or 20 cents on the dollar by CRF1. And CRF1 is now the official holder of that debt. And they decided to take the Cuban authorities to court to get a ruling to say that Cuba has to repay all of this debt. Now, this document, which is dated the 18th of February 2020, is the original claim form that CRF1 lodged in the English courts against the Cuban authorities. And you can see that the two defendants are shown as the National Bank of Cuba and the Republic of Cuba. And if we scroll down to page 2, you can see that the first defendant is the National Bank of Cuba, which is officially the borrower of the debt, and the Republic of Cuba is the guarantor of those debts. So essentially, the nation of Cuba was guaranteeing the debt obligations of the National Bank. And this section details the loans that this court action relates to. The first was created on the 17th of January 1982. It was entered into between the National Bank of Cuba and Credit Lyonnais, the French bank. And the second was created on the 30th of January 1984 between the National Bank of Cuba and the Italian bank Istituto Banco Italiano. And this section shows the amounts involved quoted in euros. And you can see the principal amount that was loaned by the French bank was 11.5 million. However, because this loan is 39 years old and is in default, the amount of accrued interest is actually 41.6 million euros. So the total amount that's now due is over 53 million euros. And the original amount of the loan provided by the Italian bank was 2.9 million euros. However, accrued interest on that loan is over 16 million euros. So the total amount required to settle the original 3 million euro loan is now almost 19 million euros. Now, in terms of the defence that's been put forward by the Cuban authorities, they're saying that the vulture fund, CRF1, doesn't officially own any of these debt obligations because in the terms and conditions of the loans, the Cuban authorities are required to approve any transfer of that debt obligation. Now, CRF1 do actually have signed documentation from an individual called Don Stevenson, who was representing the Cuban authorities. But unfortunately, Don Stevenson has subsequently been arrested and charged with corruption and bribery. So he's now in prison in Cuba. And the Cuban authorities are saying that he wasn't authorized to actually approve this transfer, and therefore CRF1 don't have valid ownership, and therefore the court case should be thrown out. And this issue is really going to be the crux of the case. If the judge decides that the transfer was illegal, and therefore CRF1 don't have legal ownership of that debt, then that is the end of the case, and CRF1 will have to take up their position with the French and Italian banks. However, if the judge decides that this transfer was legal and that Don Stevenson was an official representation of the Cuban authorities, that could have severe consequences for Cuba. The total amount of debt that CRF1 is currently suing for is only around $73 million. So it's relatively small in the context of the total amount that Cuba owes. However, this is a case of principle. If the courts decide in favour of CRF1 and say that the Cuban authorities have to settle this debt, then that opens the floodgates for the estimated $11 billion of debt that's still outstanding for the Cuban authorities. And if that was to happen, it's likely that we would see a flurry of other vulture funds stepping in, buying this debt from all of the existing holders, and then starting their own court cases to try to get repaid. Now, as I mentioned at the start of the video, Cuba doesn't actually have any money. It's virtually bankrupt. So what's the point of suing a country that doesn't have any money? Well, the reason that it's important is that until all of its debt obligations are extinguished, Cuba can't borrow any new money in the international markets, and Cuba desperately needs some help. It actually burnt its bridges in the early 1960s with the IMF when Fidel Castro refused to deal with them. So it doesn't really have a lot of options in terms of bringing some money in to buy all of the essentials such as fuel and food. So it desperately needs to set up some new debt facilities, but until it clears its name, it can't actually get access to any of them. So this court case is really quite critical, not just from the point of view of Cuba being sued and having to pay more money out, but also with regards to Cuba being able to clear the decks and getting access to new money. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video firstly to give a brief update on what's happening with Cuba. It's a very dire situation and it's not getting any better. Until Cuba gets access to a large amount of cash, it can't really solve its position because it's a net importer. So it's having to import large amounts of fuel and food and it doesn't have any reserves to be able to pay for all of that. So over the course of the last 60 years or so, it's been relying upon relationships. Firstly, that relationship was with Russia and the Soviet Union. It then switched over to Venezuela. But since the Venezuelan crisis, which started in 2016, Cuba has been in a state of turmoil. So it really needs something to happen to get itself out of this situation. And realistically, one of the best options for Cuba would be to try to raise some debt in the international markets. But obviously, it's got a bad credit record. It defaulted on its debt in 1986, and it still hasn't resolved all of those outstanding loans. 85% have been put to bed, but these commercial loans held by what's loosely called the London Club are still outstanding. And this vulture fund has appeared now and is taking very aggressive action against the Cuban authorities. And the reason that it's doing that is that there is actually an international precedent here. Argentina defaulted on its debt obligations in the 1980s and managed to agree a settlement with 93% of all of the debt holders. But some of the outstanding debt was actually picked up by a vulture fund called Elliott, who then went through the courts and received an enormous payout. It was reported that Elliott made over $2 billion profit on picking up that debt cheaply and then forcing Argentina to pay them back 40 or 50 cents on the dollar. And that's essentially what CRF1 is trying to achieve here. It wants to get some form of settlement where it can make a huge profit. But unfortunately, that would then open the floodgates for all of the other outstanding debt to also follow a similar course. And that would leave Cuba in a very difficult position because they would need to find up to $11 billion to settle all of those outstanding obligations. And of course, the other knock-on implication of this is that if this court case is decided in favour of CRF, then that opens the floodgates for all of the other countries around the world who've defaulted on their debt to suddenly get court action brought against them. And that would then make the situation even worse for all of those countries because they then need to find more money to pay off all of these new creditors at a time when they're needing to find cash to purchase fuel and food. Now, the testimonies in this court case have actually all been heard now, and the judge has gone off to make their decision. And it's likely to be 2 or 3 months before this decision is announced. And obviously, it will have major implications whichever way it goes. So as soon as that decision is announced, I will make a follow-up video to this one to let you know what the outcome was and what the implications are. So if you've liked what I've said today, please give me a thumbs up. And thank you for watching this video all the way through to the end.